Tuesday the 31st of March 2015, LPRG Reading Group. Today's paper that we're going to be discussing is by Nathaniel Mitchell and Michael Hoare. It's Agency, Accountability and Evaluations of Impoliteness. It's forthcoming or to appear?
Well, I don't know, what's the difference?
I don't know. It will soon be in JOPR.
It is. Impress.
Okay, so we're not very far out of all being able to access it elsewhere. So, Mitchell and Hoare, Agency, Accountability and Evaluation of Impoliteness.
I don't have a way of starting these things.
I'm going to say norms.
Yes, norms. Who's Chris? Yeah. Who's norms?
That this paper sets out to distinguish itself from other research by saying that it's not just about norms, and it's making this claim that previous research has either got agency or norms, and that there's some sort of conflict between those two approaches, and this is going somewhere different.
Agency.
Yes.
Isn't only.
Yeah. Is that how you understand?
Yes, previous stuff.
It does. It does say that there is obviously the discursive here a twist, but it's just about interpretation of speaker agentive intentions and against the backdrop of social norms. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I think it's slightly modern. It's a return to the kind of. I do think there is this conflict between they're finding this conflict between norms and agency, but they're trying to return in some way to the kind of Brown and Levinsonian notion of a rational agent and this idea that there is some intermediating factor between two instances of action that we can analyse as agency. Mm-hmm. But they're using all the kind of interactionist literature that's gone on since Brown and Levinson to now, as a kind of a new springboard in which to not just say this person's doing this person's doing that. And
they are, but they're relying on in the analysis very much on conversation analysis terms and concepts, whereas. I know they're not saying it's not a return to Brown and Levinson, and that's not what they're saying, but I thought that they could equally or as well have used concepts like face threatening so they're saying that, you know, I think what they're saying is partly that, you know, there are analytical approach, they're kind of using the conversation analytic approach to as kind of observable phenomena that they can comment on. But I think you can equally do that with reference to terms like, you know, positive politeness and, you know, pragmatic terms as well. So for me, I like that. I like this insistence on going, you know, getting it from the data. But I'm not so sure that using that method actually applies them any more than any other kind.
I think what they're bringing to it is a finer grained looking at some of the tiny things like
definitely
in breath or interpolated laughter or whatever
problem,
else.
You know, you have to assume the rational agent here and that notion that aspiration has one meaning. You know, they aspirated in the middle of a word.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Are we so clear that we can pick up that on the transcription, that is, you know, an aspiration there and not here, and that aspiration is agentive, you know, that, you know, it means something, and I know it means this, and I know it's there. You know, I'm sorry.
Which is the same as, that's what I thought, in some places I was kind of like, well, that's OK, okay, you're saying there's evidence for it, but actually there is your own interpretation, your own
There was one bit where they were analysing I think, which seemed to assume that I think only works as a most, I don't know, when an attack on, oh, hold on a minute, it's on page 12.
That's exactly the same bit that I...
that an interactionally problematic topic
yeah.
is being discussed
yeah.
and it involves the speaker making an assessment about a co-participant.
Yeah.
Well, no.
No.
I think means...
I just put it's hedging.
Yeah.
Which is you could equally say they've used a hedge, which is a politeness
token.
Could be, but it need not
be. Isn't that amazing? We've all picked up on that bit.
I think...
Yeah.
You know, I think could be all sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly.
The word that's missing in that sentence is potentially.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So notably, I think it is here potentially indicative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, they do refer to other CA literature, which has presumably got a big collection of other I thinks in turn initial position doing similar sorts of
But that doesn't
jobs.
Make it so,
no,
does it?
Absolutely
I mean, and I
not.
Think that's what they do throughout. They
yeah.
say, aspiration means this,
yeah.
see heritage. And I think, well, heritage doesn't know fucking everything about everything, you
no.
know? I
no.
mean...
And he may have argued what it meant at one point in one particular article.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
there was, in some places there was... I think in that particular article, there's perhaps an argument to be made about I think, but in combination with all the other things that's going on, I think they tended to make very categorical
yeah.
judgments about
yeah.
things, rather than
yeah.
saying there's this and there's this and there's this and
yeah.
there's this, and all those things together might lead you
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
And I do find it a bit categorical in places.
Yeah.
As you say, this means this, rather than it could mean this, and we can bring in this other evidence perhaps to support that view.
But I think from their own argument, they could do that. You know, this
yeah,
idea
they
that
could.
You look at the next term,
mm.
see
yeah.
what the next term is, in order to work out what that term was.
Yeah.
I mean, part of me, I hate to say this, but part of me did think this was a little bit Emperor's New Clothes in places.
Mm. A little bit what?
Emperor's New Clothes.
Yes, but it's not really that different to...
I mean, well, in the sense that I was reading what they were saying about the criticism of what hasn't been, and I was thinking, really? I mean, I think it's probably one of those other things that we haven't explicitly talked about, but if you think about it in... You know, in terms of the evaluations things, if you're looking at evaluations turn on turn, you are looking at how the speaker then takes up the addressee's
mm.
saying, because the addressee then becomes the speaker.
Yes.
And if you're looking
yeah.
at it discursively,
yeah.
you're looking at it turn on turn.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, what they're doing is putting, you know, they're kind of trying to justify looking at these particular types of interactional problems, which is fine. And I don't have an issue problem with that. But it's like, you know, does it need that degree of justification in some senses? Why not say, let's look at this interesting aspect of talk, rather than trying to perhaps just claim it's bigger, newer and bigger and different than it really is. Because, you know, we have been looking at the evaluation for a while, and people have looked at things like, you know, about where problems have turned up. They've not just looked at them necessarily in the context of next term position.
Yeah.
And there's always been the sense that people don't always, you know, lots of discussions in the institutional literature about the way in which, as well as in planners, are about people not necessarily taking up offence and making offence clear because of power relationships or... just wanting to, you know, interact with your management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's where because I've got a note here. You know, they talk about interactionally sensitive. Isn't that just the same as saying it's face threatening? So
yeah, it's a potentially
really,
difficult piece of
I don't really exactly. I don't really see what that this. Having said that, I don't like to be overcritical because I do like a lot about this. But
yeah,
yeah.
I think it is partly the, you know, the context in that you've got to kind of almost make things sound more impressive than they are to make sure it ticks your boxes for your local research evaluation framework things.
Well,
then that gets you an extra star.
Yeah.
There are two things they're doing here. They are both coming from a conversation analytic informed background.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's very
And therefore they have to use the words that will be recognised by those sorts of people that might read this. So, you know, we all know, and I know more than probably anybody, that the conversation analysts hate the politeness people and the politeness people hate the conversation analysts, and I'm one of both, and I kind of always feel awkward, no matter what meeting I'm at. So they're using the words to appeal to bring in, I think, the conversation analytic people into a politeness world to make us then realise that we've got something to say. They're also doing this job, I think, of carving out this term interactional pragmatics.
Yeah.
And I think
yes,
that, you know,
absolutely.
Arundel and Hoare, I think, are claiming that. And
yeah,
they've got to put the... When we create... We don't create new stuff out of nowhere. It's always a version of some old stuff with a slightly different cut. But what we need is new words so we go, oh, those are my words, quote me.
Absolutely.
Quote me when you say this word, not them, because
yeah,
it's the new words that
yeah
matter. So I think they're doing... There is that... agenda job,
yes,
potentially.
Yeah, this is yeah better CA stuff than any of the stuff that I've seen within CA, which
yes,
you know, gestures towards politeness, which
yeah
usually has such a
that's
rudimentary
right it, and it's because it's gesturing, and this is really
yeah
properly
yeah
trying,
I mean, it really is
doing
trying
integration
to do, you know, the two together, and I think that's why it's good. But it also shows up why it isn't very good. It also shows why it doesn't work.
Well, there's
you
some
know,
issues
CA,
with it.
CA just can't, for me anyway, just can't work very well with politeness stuff, because you do have to make these statements about this means this, and I don't see conversation in that way. You know, I don't think you can say this always means this.
No.
Or even this means
yeah, yeah
this in this.
Because conversation are actually interested ultimately in the machinery that's available as a resource for
yeah
everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A decontextually.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think, you know, where discursive approaches differ from that is that it's that sense of, well, there's lots of misunderstanding, people aren't in control of what they're talking about, you know, and we don't actually know what people are doing or even what we're doing.
Or that it's just that the meanings are so infinitely variable is what this means on this occasion. I mean,
yeah,
you feel
yeah
so at the end of the CA, why this now kind of thing, but
yeah
in the discursive context you're thinking, well, but it's a more variable
why this
context
is.
Yeah, you know, it's just not so tied. I suppose, yeah, we don't have to say it's so tied to a particular form or hesitation or
yeah
seeing those things as being absolutely tied to meanings.
But again, going back to Chris's first word of this discussion, which is norms, that doesn't stop us from our previous life histories of being in other situations where a little bit of interpolated laughter into something has done similar sorts of jobs, for us to draw on that as a possible interpretative rubric for this particular situated thing. So
but
therefore,
it's,
you know, it's the word potentially.
I think it's that undecidability which is important, because we never, ever know really what laughter means.
You know,
we do know
in the sense that yeah, all right. So we do know in the sense that we feel we know when we're interacting with somebody and somebody
yeah
laughs, and then you immediately interpret it, and then you don't think, well, that potentially could have meant this or it could have meant that. We just come up with an interpretation, don't we?
Really?
And we work with that.
I don't know.
All right.
But
sometimes with retrospect,
was
we might
that
want to say,
a single laugh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
with retrospect,
I don't.
We might
sometimes
do that.
Yeah.
We're normally
yeah
interactive.
But
we just take it and move on.
But
yeah
then you negotiate it, don't you? So you react in one way, and then that's the way you take
meaning
it up, and that becomes a meaning which then gets reacted to, and you kind of negotiate
yeah
it. So,
but after, I mean, it could be just after. You
yeah
might start thinking, on the basis of what's happened now,
yeah,
I don't think that was a happy
yes
little laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was
yeah
a sneery little laugh.
Yes. No, absolutely. But what I'm saying is that we don't sort of, as we talk, we don't think, well, this has got five meanings.
No.
I'm going to potentially
no
explore
no, no,
three
no,
of them. And we just take one and go. And
or we think, I don't know about that.
Yes.
For now.
And even then we
but
say,
I'll,
well, I don't care. I just
and it might never matter. So, I'll, you know,
yeah,
it'll either matter and I'll work it
yeah
out, or it won't
yeah
matter and I won't save my, I'll
yeah
save my energy.
But I think,
yeah,
for me, there's a lot more of that. I don't know. I mean, maybe they mean that, maybe they don't. I mean, maybe that's just me. But I am quite comfortable with the undecidability.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think most of us are, you
yeah
know.
Yeah.
And it's only sort of later on that you think, oh, so that's that's what that meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in a couple of hours I'm going to go home and talk to Silly and go, oh God, she wasn't actually joking when I was... Sort of
no.
I know. Anyway, I'm still laughing it off.
Laugh away.
Yeah, you're just hearing a poison in the coffees coming later.
But I'm just wondering whether there are with the loss of Brown and Levinson, right, and that sort of stability that gave politeness research, the we've developed sort of different areas of, and but we've also we still have different premises that we start from.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't start any longer from the Brown and Levinson premise, but there are certain premises that we start from, and I think that where we're heading is that one of the things that we're going in this particular group is that we assume that no linguistic resource has a single meaning.
Yeah.
and therefore whenever you talk about it, it's always I'm going to take this as the meaning and go with it, mm-hmm. knowing that and on this basis I'm taking it as the meaning and going with it,
mm-hmm.
and on this basis in the context of this interaction is why I'm taking this and going with it, rather than saying I'm taking I think to mean this because somebody who wrote an article 20 years
yes.
ago said it. So so I think that there are different premises that they're coming from compared to the premises that we come from.
I think that it all just ties back into, I'm surprised Andrew didn't say it, but the idea of sufficient for current purposes from the Clark in literature. And
mm-hmm.
meaning is about sufficiency. It's not about a perfect mapping
two
people
yeah.
coming to the same meaning. It's about,
mm-hmm.
really, we just want to continue with this. And it's not worth our time to evaluate the exact meaning that you meant and the exact meaning
that's
that
right.
I
meant.
Yeah.
It's something that you put out there and then the meaning kind of is worked on out there.
Yeah.
It's not... I don't think we start with. I mean,
yeah, you certainly
yeah,
don't go aspiration in the middle of a word. That must mean you know you don't.
So
do, that's
what
the
so in the context of this example, the example of the Chinese Australian born in America,
mm-hmm.
Mm. Taiwanese,
yeah. So what are we saying is. And what are they saying? Because I'm not sure. I mean, I might be, I probably am a bit thick, but I'm not entirely sure I've got my head around the significance of agency in this example.
I think
but
that's my problem with the whole thing, actually,
mm.
agency. I mean,
mm.
I worry that is a buzzword
mm.
rather than anything else in particular. It means that if you use the term agency, then you do bring to the foreground evaluation, sure,
mm-hmm.
but you do that anyway, or rather, Michael Orr would do that anyway, certainly, you know. I don't quite know what the concept of agency adds to it.
Because I think, in terms
right.
of.
Well, agency just means choice, doesn't it?
Well, that's it, and I think
yeah.
in this, it's precisely not agency that they're talking about, because they're talking about the way that choices are constrained by a perception
yeah.
that you're having. An effect on someone else. You know,
yeah.
Fenn says something a bit crass,
yeah.
right? That's agency.
Mm-hmm.
And she recognises, oh, fuck, you know, I've actually said something which could be insulting Jill, and then, is it Jill?
Yeah.
And then, therefore, I have to backtrack a bit and try and make sure that she recognises that I'm not having a go at her. So, in some ways, that seems to me, you know, co-constructed. It's not
yes.
agency. It's very,
yeah.
very much
yeah.
co-constructed.
And Jill, so presumably, I just want to... So what they're saying is that Jill, for example, Jill is deciding,
yes.
have agency
yeah. yes.
in whether to
choice.
Be offended or
yeah.
whether to take it up
yeah.
as offence
yeah.
yeah.
or not.
Yeah. Yes. But,
I think it's, to me, it makes more sense to explain it, and maybe this is the same thing, I don't know, as that they are managing within the kind of what they see as the,
yeah.
the norms of an initial interaction
yeah.
with somebody that you don't know. They're managing that interaction.
Because that's not a choice.
And again, face threat. Well, I suppose it's always a choice, but
up to a point.
You could have
yeah.
told it to F off.
Yeah.
On page five, in the section.
I'd be interested to know, did they have many cases where people didn't do the managing?
Yeah.
Why would they not?
No, I would guess not. But
and
I'd
again, you've
got
to think about norms then.
Yeah,
why
this
did
is
they?
Well,
yeah.
I think so how much of a choice is it, or how much agency is it?
I mean, there's
yeah.
a funny element in that. It seems like this is about saying that it's not about norms, but actually the two examples that they picked, the potential
yeah.
impoliteness in that plays exactly on norms in a kind of cultural,
yeah.
mimetic
and
way.
And
that
conflicting
norms
as well. I need to tighten up this assumption that there's the word choice in agency.
Mm.
And the definition they use on page 5, about 5 lines down in section 2, which is agency, accountability, and social action. They say, generally speaking, agency is defined as, I'm going to leave out two words, and then I'm going to put them back in. Agency is defined as the capacity to act or not act.
Yeah.
But then they put in the socio-culturally mediated
yeah.
capacity
yeah.
to act or not act. So that's just, we have the ability to,
yeah.
and the word choice isn't actually in there. Though it's inherent in that if you do one, then you... Then
well, a couple of lines down, speaker's ability to choose particularly socially indexical expressions.
Typography, yeah.
So,
I mean, is agency not just a new kind of buzzword for intentionality? Or is it?
Well, if you look at page 5 at the bottom, they say associate the mediated awareness and the part of the union, this is a part of the agency, and they list these three things, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And one is to do with intentionality.
Mm. Or it's volitional, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The rest, the other two are reaction, evaluation.
But so, for example,
there's
stuff from Durante that's quite popular in the kind of this new semiotic approach that's big in linguistic anthropology.
Yeah.
Is all about trying to bridge this idea of emergent meaning as something that is just emergent in interaction with this notion of intentionality or agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one potential thing that is it's not a problem in this paper, but it's just that I don't think that clearly enough express when they're talking about something that is an emergent meaning in interaction versus when they're talking about candidate meanings that they think the participants might have arrived at.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to just gloss everything as
it
meant this or they don't say potentially.
Yeah.
And I think that's where some of this problem is.
Which is the same problem as I think
what you often
Paul himself has criticised earlier about discursive.
But I think I like the idea of being able to analyse both, but so long as a clear distinction is made between what you can see in the interaction as a potential, you know, construal or whatever, versus what you as an analyst believe the interactors might be taking to be the meaning.
But if they're going to say that it's a socio-culturally mediated capacity to act, then they need a bit more of the socio-cultural. I mean, you know, agency is fine as long as you don't go back to Brandon Levinson thinking we're all totally in control of everything we do.
No,
politeness, we didn't invent politeness. You know, we don't make it up. It's obviously a system that predates us.
Right.
So,
well, what do we think about the moral thing?
Yes.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, I mean, that struck me as very Brown Levinsonian, actually, rationality and Grice too. I mean, Grice is about moral
order.
His idea of rationality
is morality.
They do say that theirs is a particular definition. On page 6, they have that moral footnote, which I think they should have built into the. Because they're not really talking about morality, because they're talking about evaluation, actually. Evaluation in relation to notions of appropriateness or whatever.
Yes.
They're not talking about morals in the sense of
rightness.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I mean, I feel, looking at that first extract, that big extract, that what strikes me is to do with social norms to the fore, because...
Mm-hmm.
This analysis, the detail of it is very impressive.
Mm.
And perhaps you can say, okay, well, that's what it's there for, you know, to demonstrate that this can be done. But the trouble with doing all of this is it misses what seems to me, or it obfuscates or hides some obvious interesting things. And to me, when I read this, what's interesting, okay, yes, it is interesting that the American Jill raises the possibility of taking offence, and then it's very explicit, more than most people would be, about she's not going to take offence sort of thing. What's interesting to me is it pops into her head in the first place.
Mm.
I mean, as it happens, it wouldn't be me.
Yeah.
If at least not if we were talking about British people or something like that, you know?
It wouldn't.
It wouldn't. You know, the possibility, certainly not the way that Fenn has been talking.
Mm.
Because I don't think there's anything in the way that Fenn has been talking. She hasn't up to that point said, you know, sorry about this, I'm afraid I have to say this, or something like that, has she?
Yeah, she makes
she?
A presumption
yeah.
that Jill is
it's
in the sea America in the same sort of way
yeah,
that she is.
Exactly.
And that's
yeah.
what we go along with. I mean,
yeah.
just like the girl in the woman in the second one
yeah.
makes an assumption that political science is funny.
I just think she's very weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny it was so funny that this example came up, because I was trying to recruit participants the other day, and I was going around with a clipboard. And I sort of small talk with the people and there were two men, probably second or third year students, who were sat together, and I came up with a clipboard. And one of them was doing, what do you call it, medicine, becoming a doctor, and the other one was a political scientist. And they made the same joke that what is political science? How can politics be a science? And I think that's the idea that she's playing. You know, this, what do you even study? You know, do you, but and it, I think there is a cultural kind of.
Yeah, some comedians were making the same comment about Cameron's degree. I think that it, oh yeah, but it's a first, but it's only in political science.
It's
PhD.
Oh, that's embroidery, yes.
Because they're trying to establish shared ground on it, because this is a first encounter, I mean, maybe that's the sort of thing that they're trying to say. You know, you and I share a particular view of America. You and I share a particular view of political science. Maybe they don't. I mean, but that's part of the assaying.
Well, let's at least for this interaction make out as if we do.
Yeah, because that will make us feel as if
this has been
something,
and then
go away. Yeah, let's try and find something that we can share.
Given the the essentially artificial frame in which this data is collected, you know, two people thrown into a room together to get to know each other. You would have thought, given that it would be very much first meeting and what would be in a first order sense called polite.
Yes,
it is true, of course, the idea of laughing political science is, of course, you know, the apparent oxymoron of politics and science and so on. But did they at the conference in London, did they play that second extract?
I think that one struck me as vaguely familiar, and I couldn't remember what context.
And I thought at the time that maybe there's something else going on here. Maybe this girl, which is a girl, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is more obviously laughing at this guy.
Or maybe she's
just
doing
banter.
You know, women do banter as
well.
Well, the thing that struck me was...
certainly Australians.
Maybe it's nerves, because they've been put... It seems like it's very early on in the interaction.
Yeah.
They've been put in this situation where they've got to get to know each other, and it's kind of like,
I'm interested in what the... Because they say they didn't tell them, but they didn't tell them that they were, you know, essentially setting up unknowns to talk to each other to see what happened. What did they tell them?
Yeah.
What was their excuse for putting these two people in?
The line just says, the participants were invited to take part in the recordings as a way of getting to know new people.
That's bizarre, isn't it? I read that and I thought, what is this?
I suspect it's a bunch of new people to the area.
Or at the university,
it might have been a new academic semester or something like that, where new postgrads come in and don't know anybody. So here's just a forum for people to.
But you wouldn't expect to get to know somebody in very constructive pairs.
Yeah.
And
it's
being recorded.
Did they tell them later
that they were being recorded?
Yeah.
No, it was a video. Do we know if the participants took place in more than one interaction? So one thing that I don't know if they highlight... They talk about this as if by having these initial interactions they can get rid of all the kind of...
The history that comes in.
But actually there's the opposite side to it
in that
where's the investment to be someone who's going to continue a relationship with this person? You can actually be... impolite if you want in that context, because you don't need to be invested into an ongoing relationship.
No, I'd agree.
Especially, I imagine that would be heightened if we've done this five times.
I'm trying to find the answer because I reviewed the multilingual paper, so I'm trying to find it.
Okay.
Leave me working out and I'll see if I can tell you.
I mean, also, there is a difference between kind of these unknown between same sex and cross sex conversations. In other words, I'd probably feel. Entirely, female I haven't met before talking, but the guy there would just be a bit more awkward, I think. And does that account for maybe that girl's just feeling a bit more on edge because it's potentially a bit more at stake, kind of thing.
Yes, sorry. 62 participants, 46 recordings. Some of them participated in more than one interaction.
Oh, right. Okay.
36 female, 26 male.
It'd be interesting to see if these two are people who did it more than once or not. I have a general problem with this kind of methodology where there's this assumption that natural conversation, which is just about interacting with someone, is the natural place that we find language. So let's try and reconstruct that and then call that natural.
Yeah.
Whereas, so I run map task data, And I've been told by conversation analysts that it's contrived because they're doing a task while they're speaking. And I think, well, if anything, your data is more contrived. You should have gone with the camera down in front of them to go on, have a conversation.
Really?
Yeah.
And
really?
They said
it's contrived.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it's task oriented.
Yeah.
It's not the gold standard.
It's
naturally
what they would have been doing anyway. Well, actually, yes. On this Tuesday afternoon, that's what they would have been doing anyway because I'd scheduled them to be in my experience.
It's all context, as Deborah Cameron would say.
Yeah.
It's all whatever it is.
So I do have a... I mean, I quite like their data is nice, and they're not as strong as some of the SEER people are saying. This is natural data. And then you actually listen to it, and it sounds so forced because they're sat in an SU and they've just had a research come up for them today. Do you mind if I put a recording device there?
But in a way, this political science example, maybe it doesn't matter whether she's laughing because she's nervous or whatever, for the purposes of this, because of the way he takes it up. So the thing is, the potential for it being taken, rude is there, regardless of the intention behind it. And that's the point of looking at discourse, is that you can see how he reacts and how it gets oriented to.
Which is the thing, I don't get a sense from the description here about what the reaction actually means in terms of the later. Does anybody?
Again, Jim.
What does his reaction mean? You know, lines 34, 39.
Yeah.
What does it actually mean in terms of relating? Is he actually joking? You know, because you can't have feeling, well, what should I study? Politics or aviation? I'm not sure. You know, it seems like an unlikely choice that an individual would come up with. So is it a kind of joke or what? Does he mean it? What level of tongue-in-cheek?
In some ways, he's not old enough to wish to have his time again because he's still having his time.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're only a few years into your degree, you've still got time to change your mind.
Not to aviation, surely.
I don't know.
It's going to be right able and cost.
I'm not sure why that... Because surely the point is that he's saying something as if her reaction was a disapproval.
Yeah, well, yes, it's an acknowledgement that you've got to take on board that political sciences sounds like a real bummer, you know?
And did they only talk to him? Did they only got responses from him?
They only report on the person potentially offended.
I would have been interested
I'm sure they have interviews with all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Well, they could, yes, because before they have the conversation, they don't know where the offences are going to be and or what, etc. But yeah, I would have been interested to kind of see what the other people, the speakers. I mean, I know that's not the focus of this, but then is it equally as bad to focus purely on the addressee?
Yeah, they just say that time constraint. They say they are interested in the other side of the coin, but it's just for this paper limited set of papers.
I also find it a very problem when they say, well, they make some claim about, oh, and that data's not here.
Yeah.
I know it's space constraints and because of the detail they go into it, but I do find that difficult.
Yeah, because they could have just decided to do one piece and give more detail.
But then they could be, that's the OCA people, we expect more than one fragment for one example.
Yeah, two's not really very much more than one.
No, true. Yeah, but I just find only.
Jefferson, there are 74 cases.
It's just like with evidencing. I had that with a dissertation student doing CA, and she was really upset that she couldn't use every single example. And obviously, the person supervising can't be expected to be able to. It's like, no, there's a word limit, and that applies.
Mm.
Yeah. You have to select. Sorry, Beth, that's isn't it. But. But yeah, I do find, because I want to be a judge for myself whether I agree with the statements you're making about certain things. And I know that's always a problem, but when I'm writing, I do try, if I'm going to make a claim about it.
Fortunately, it's Michael, right? Fortunately, it's Michael. I trust Michael.
Well,
for the record, Michael, I'm with you, guy.
There's some people, I will trust him more than some of them, but even so, I still want to see it, and that's... That's probably me, but I find that.
Karen, can they have a longer word in it, please? I'm sure they'd be quite happy to put it in there.
Yeah.
Just to go back to Jim's point, this to me seems like a kind of
told my papers.
Not practice, but a response that this person's given before to the questioning of why they're doing it. I had a friend when I was doing my undergraduate degree who studied film studies. And in certain contexts, film study is not seen as an intellectually sort of challenging course. And he would always make a point of emphasising that he was good enough to have done a history degree as well, but he chose to do film studies because he wanted to go in the film industry. So he identified as this person who could have done history, something that you might consider a more intellectually stimulating, if that's the way you think about it. But he's doing film studies, and I think this is what this is doing. It's what is political science? Well, I'll pick something that
it's like aviation.
You can get around. No, it's not that it's like aviation, but it's something that you can get your head around that is a thing that exists and a degree that you might think, oh yeah, you do an aviation to be a pilot, which is how she orients to it.
But he could have said there is some substance to political science, your friend. I mean, it's crap. I should have done something else.
It's so much easier to agree with people than disagree with people, isn't it?
Well, that's what they say, isn't it?
That's just you and me, Sarah.
Saying that it's a norm of comedy that they're oriented to, and they do it, which I think is really interesting. I mean, maybe people have said it elsewhere, but I haven't come across it. This thing about that they're managing the potential face threat, as I would call it, the interactional difficulty, through normalisation and depersonalisation, and I think that is quite interesting and something that you can apply all over the place, I would have thought.
Yeah.
How is that different to
a norm?
You would
have to say that
when you normalise something, how is it different
culture?
To a norm?
Because it's
more
specific,
although perhaps it is in this particular situation.
I suppose what I'm saying is that when you normalise, you're orienting towards norms.
A norm.
Than being in place.
The norm theory is
dependent on drawing on norms.
The norm here is that literature science is not a real subject.
This stuff reminds me a lot of Dan Sperber's cultural attractors stuff. I don't know if you've come across that, where you've got these notions of cultural attractors that can then form the premise of be part of the premise of an implicature.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening here. When she starts laughing at political science, he's not just thinking, "Oh, you're laughing at me because I do." There's this some culturally normative thing that political science is worth laughing at.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, imagine if you just walked into this room and your interaction happened to have a big nose, and you just started making jokes about people with big noses.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work in the same way.
Yeah.
It's because there is this
cultural history.
Political science potentially having a status.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with both of these cases. I imagine it's quite typical in non-American English-speaking countries
to dish the American,
to think of Americans as arrogant and obnoxious for whatever reason. I think that's quite normal that would be something that you can make.
It's a myth, is what Bowers calls a myth.
Yeah,
something which is out there.
Or an ideology.
But you
assume it's out there. It's not there.
You're not saying anything about its truth or untruth.
Yeah.
It's just known about.
Yes.
But it's a meme.
Mm.
Yes. It can be used to form, or can used to be part of a premise in a deriving the meaning of what this person's saying.
Yeah.
Mm.
I suppose I'm still going back to that thing about the premises and so on. This is just coming at norms from a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's about evaluation, and that evaluation is in the act of normalising. You're saying, these are the norms I'm orienting to.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah.
What this paper does have, which I haven't read any other papers that have done the same thing, is this conversation interview, which they admit is just, and they quote you, saying it's just another text which just needs another interpretation, but at least it does something more than having it does. Because people don't. So the idea is we can choose to react or not react in certain ways, and generally we don't say, hang on, that was bloody rude. It's just me and Sarah, or Sarah and everybody, me and everybody.
The what's his name? The guy is the political scientist.
Greg.
Greg on page 18, he starts off by saying, I don't really care, I'm not really offended, and by the end of it, he's he's being fairly damning about this person. You know, then he gives an excuse defending the good old liberal arts. You know, so it's a bit sliding, but you can see where he's going.
Mm.
And then by the end, he's complaining about people only taking him in terms of job prospects.
Mm. Yeah. You know, when she laughs, is there any one way you can interpret that?
No, not at all.
I mean, that sounds really scary.
Oh, right. Okay.
That, you know, that sort of, that laugh saying, political science, that sounds like a really difficult thing to be studying.
Yeah.
Could the laugh mean that?
We would have to know what she said after he said that.
Yeah.
I
well,
see.
My memory of hearing it, she said it was
fairly immediately sort of political science, basically, oh, my, you know, like that.
Right.
That was how I remember.
And
it,
did you hear the bit after he said about aviation? I mean,
They played that too. Yes.
The bit after aviation.
Yeah.
But what?
Because that's crucial, isn't
it? Oh, I see. You mean the post commentary?
Yeah.
After 9:40.
Yeah.
After 9:40,
what happens after?
If she then said, "Oh no, I didn't mean to offend you. I just meant, wow, that's incredible."
Yeah.
But line 39 and 40, she asks, what is political science?
Mm-hmm.
What is political science?
Where are we?
On the
page 16.
Yeah,
page 16.
So what do they say about that?
And in his sort of evaluation of it, he sort of goes into detail about how he actually thinks it's interesting, but he's used to that sort of.
Right, this is another place where I think, I call it over-interpretation, because what they say is, Joanne subsequently attempts to regain composure, and they reference Goffman. And I'm like, well, attempts to. How do we know that's what she's doing?
Yeah,
you can't see that in there. Yes, she does. It's interesting that she asks. She asks the question, what is political science? But interpreting that as an attempt to regain composure, that seems entirely.
She's got composed already. She hasn't been giggling all the way through lines 34, 35, 36, and 37.
She's not indicated.
No.
Mm-hmm. They're saying it's an orientation to the interactional trouble, which
mm-hmm.
I think it is, but I'm not convinced by that interpretation that it's a regain to composure.
Well, it's more that, I mean, okay, without seeing what I guess it was trying to kind of fix, sort of get things perhaps. No, but maybe she thinks, maybe I have offended this person, let's ask them or something, so we can kind of make up that ground.
But where does that interpretation come from?
Well, everything up until then, apart from her, what do you study, after she's got the response, everything is either laughter or smile voice.
Mm-hmm.
And line 39 is not laughter nor smile voice.
Mm-hmm.
So composure might just mean
back
to seriousness.
Fair enough. That would convince me if the analysis said, well, there's a change in tone and you can see that because of the absence of laughter, the tone of voice and that, yeah.
What I want to talk about is I find this a very odd exchange. Somehow. I mean, if it was having a very natural conversation, you would expect, if you get that reaction, right, and then you make possibly a joke, possibly not about, well, maybe I should have been a pilot instead, you would have thought that an obvious thing to do is to talk about what you feel about political science. You know, why did you laugh? You know, why is it so funny?
Yeah.
And so perhaps you talk about that. And instead, you get him saying that pilot thing, and then her, like, sort of, okay, let's cut off that bit, right? Let's go back to, what do you do? Political science. Oh, what is political science?
Yeah.
We're back to Jack's comment about...
I think it is that bizarre.
No.
Not for a first
encounter. We're back to Jack's comment about sufficient for current purposes. Now, I don't know whether people know Spenovic's data, which is initial encounters. His data was collected by people who were eventually going to be working together. So they had a good reason to get to know each other.
Yeah.
These people are potentially never going to meet ever again.
Mm.
And therefore... Sarah said something about when we come into an interaction, we've just got to keep it going, and after that, we can all leave happy.
Mm. Exactly. And what they're doing
is
trying to keep it going.
It's sustaining an encounter.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sustaining interaction, and it really doesn't matter how
for its
own sake, and therefore, it's not odd for that purpose.
No, I agree.
It's odd for real people.
Exactly. In order to meet people. Then it's yes and no, isn't it? I mean, they potentially might be continuing you know, if this is to establish friendships.
But then if you decided well, this isn't going to work out.
No.
So
she's too brash.
Yeah.
He's studying political science.
Yeah.
That's not
going to work. Then you just kind of try to keep it going until they say you can stop now, and then that's it. But you know, you don't want to sit there in awkward silence for however many minutes either. Because, yeah, I mean, look, this is at the beginning of the conversation. And the turn number suggests that.
Yeah.
So I would like to know a lot more about these two. Like, so here it says they range from, is this the length of the things, from 15 and a half minutes through to 1 hour and 50 minutes.
Wow.
So how long were these interactions? Were these one of the shorter ones, or were these one of the longer ones? Or?
Mean length, 26 minutes, he says. So this is in his multilingual paper, which is his forthcoming, which everybody references.
But I don't think this is totally out of sync with my experience of, you know, sort of, drinks,
perceptions.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're impossible to get right, you know, because you don't have shared assumptions about things, and you've got to construct those, and you get it wrong all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
if you run away.
Well, you know, yeah, I must get a drink.
Oh, look, there's. You should talk to
I must go.
Children to pick up.
Yeah, you end up having a conversation with someone who's obviously a rampant Tory, and you kind of stand there nodding like this, and then you go away and go, oh my God. But you don't actually tend to.
The classic example would be Gordon Brown and the bigoted woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because in the conversation, he was, I'm sure, terribly polite with her.
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, in other cultures, would that not be? You know, does that not happen? Are there groups who would, with a stranger, challenge, you know, and say, well, I think you're wrong, or that was very rude, or...
What was very rude?
Anything.
Anything
that's considered very rude.
Yeah, just being prepared to evaluate something as being very rude
You know, the stuff that Karen and I have been doing on directness and indirectness, in Hebrew, it's seen as being honest with people if you say, that's wrong.
Exactly.
You know, I don't agree with you.
I also believe, I don't have enough expertise in this, but I also believe it's the same in big capital deaf culture in sign language. Just be, you know, really forthright.
Yeah.
And I think, haven't they invented the term confrontation culture? I've heard that somewhere.
In where? What?
Confrontation culture.
Yes.
With reference to some Hispanic-speaking cultures and Greek culture as well. Modern Greek culture. And somebody's written a paper, several people have written papers on it, but I can't remember now. And of course,
Yes, wasn't it Maria and Pilar have got a conflict paper that we saw in London last couple of years ago?
Maybe.
Is it kind of why they like conflict
almost?
Yeah,
they like it.
They don't avoid it. In my
construal, conflict serves. Serves positive face actually because it means it means you can carry on the conversation.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It, you know, terrible weather out there, isn't it? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Now we've got nothing else to talk about.
Yeah.
If I say,
yeah.
No, it isn't. It's beautiful. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Then we can talk. You know.
Yeah.
So
it's
I think that's the logic of it.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
Well, I like that paper.
No, I did.
I like this paper too.
Well, it promoted good discussion.
We've not had any trouble talking about it. I arrived too late because there were sort of questions I wanted to ask. Do other people understand this bit? Because I have to admit,
there are
some bits that I found hard to understand.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I'll ask about them another time.
I don't want to try and be a getting a last word person, but there's certainly something I wanted to mention right towards the end. They talk about the interviews and how.
Page
19, a paragraph and a bit up, and it starts this move to avoid being seen as taking offence. In both the interactions themselves and the follow up interviews, is, as we have noted previously, consistent with the preference for comity.
Comity, yeah.
Now, I've written here, yes, but avoiding being seen to be offended and not being offended are still not the same
thing.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Absolutely.
If you wanted to avoid that,
Jill would have never brought up the possibility of being offended in the first place.
No, and indeed she said, I'll try not to be offended.
Yeah.
I'll try not to be offended.
I find that quite offensive, actually. saying that.
I'll try not to be offended.
Yeah.
It's a bit like
anyway,
starting with, I don't mean to be impolite.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
With all due respect.
With all due respect.
And with all due respect, we're stopping up there.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
That the